You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And we are broadcasting Why We Cook live tonight from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can also now become a friend of Why We Cook on Facebook. Check us out. And you can also now go to whywecook.com and leave us a message or write something or just look around and see what's there. We'd love to have you. So tonight on Why We Cook, it's the Big Breakfast Show. The last few shows, if you've been listening, have been focusing more on certain vegetables, late summer harvest stuff. Last week was a show about mackerel and sardines and anchovies, but in the spirit of going back to school this week for a lot of people, I thought we would talk about breakfast, since there's probably a lot of people suddenly shifting gears this week and getting back into the groove. I thought we would maybe explore the world of breakfast. And inspiration for the show also came from last night in my house. My husband and I were clicking through old photos on his computer. We were kind of having a good time. What would have been 10 years ago sitting on the couch looking at photo albums now involves both sitting in chairs by a computer looking at all our old pictures. And we were looking at pictures from a trip we took to Japan about 5 years ago. And we were in Japan for about 3 weeks. And we mostly stayed with a friend of mine who hosted us and also in hotels. But for a very short part of the trip, we went to Kyoto to stay in a traditional ryokan. Ryokans are traditional Japanese inns that often have hot springs or bath rituals associated with them. And part of the whole process of staying in a ryokan is that you stay in a traditional Japanese room with tatami mats on the floor and sleep on a futon, and your meals are served to you in your room. And we went to this one ryokan that was recommended to us in Kyoto, and it was very expensive, so we only stayed for one night. But I wanted the traditional experience. And so, like I said, when you stay in a ryokan, your meals are served to you in your room, and you sit on the floor, and you wear a kimono, or more like an obi, like a cotton robe. And the pictures we were laughing at were the ones of us sitting in the traditional cotton robes, sitting on the floor eating, because, needless to say, we looked ridiculous in our ungraceful, lumpy, Western-bodied, schleppy traveler sort of way. We weren't the picture of traditional Japanese grace and elegance. But the food was great. We had really good meals served right to us. They were very traditional Kyoto-style meals, very unfamiliar stuff, lots of unfamiliar vegetables, lots of weird little fish, and a lot of tofu. It was great. But what I had forgotten all about was this breakfast that we were served the second morning we were there, until I saw the picture last night. Getting back to breakfast, and the whole point of tonight's show is that we had this breakfast while we were there that was really unforgettable. It was a spread of probably about 12 small dishes served in courses. Everything from soft tofu in broth to different types of pickles, whole tiny broiled fish, rice, different types of miso soup, raw eggs mixed into rice. I mean, just like all kinds of stuff. Really, really interesting, really kind of strange for breakfast, but great. Actually, I'm going to put a picture that I have of that breakfast on the Why We Cook Facebook page tonight after the show. So if you go there, you can check it out. Kyoto is a really serious food town. I mean, all of Japan is serious about their food. They take food very, very seriously, almost to a fetishistic level, in a good way. But Kyoto is a really serious food town. You walk around the market and there are stores that just sell pickles. There are stores that just sell miso, that just sell bonito flakes, and it's very steeped in tradition. And, you know, so in a country that takes its food so seriously, breakfast is also taken extremely seriously. And even a very simple breakfast in Japan usually involves a bowl of rice, a bowl of miso soup, some kind of fish, usually some kind of pickle, maybe some tofu. And that's really how you get the culinary motor running and, you know, you get your energy up and going is you eat something like that. That's like super power nutrition kind of breakfast. And when we stayed with my friend in Tokyo, she made us some variation of this every morning. And I loved it. It was great because I'm not a sweet breakfast person at all. You know, she'd put the rice in the rice cooker the night before, so it was ready to go. She'd throw together some miso soup, which only takes a couple minutes. And sometimes if there were leftover pieces of fish or some other protein, she would put that in. Or some days she'd make something called ochazuke, which is leftover rice that you then simmer with green tea to like kanji. And you can throw in little bits of protein too, or you can throw an egg in raw and then mix it in and it cooks in there. And it was great. And, you know, as a lover of the non-sweet breakfast, I was totally in heaven. I'm all about protein in the morning and it was really great. So anyway, we're looking at these pictures last night from this trip we took years ago to Japan. And then, you know, commenting on how much younger we looked, of course. And then, you know, shut that down. And I went and I turned on the TV. And because it's back to school week, there are all sorts of ads on about going back to school and what you can buy for your kids and do for your kids. And there was an ad that came on that really made me almost want to kill myself. Well, not kill me, kill the people who created the ad. It was a mom, a loving, concerned, you know, hip kind of mom, talking about getting her kids ready and up in the morning and sending them off to school with a good breakfast. And what was she sending them off to school with after having eaten basically Pop-Tarts, some variation on the Pop-Tart, frozen, pre-made pastry for the toaster that had some kind of icing on it. And the big claim was that it had real fruit in it. And of course, if you know anybody with the intelligence of a chair knows that that's not real fruit. It's some kind of puree of processed fruit with a lot of corn syrup and nasty stuff. But then what made this commercial really, really evil was it wasn't just for the frozen toaster pastry, but then she went on to talk about how after the end of the day when the kids came home from school, they were hungry and what did she give them but, you know, little pizza rolls. So again, little bits of, you know, dough wrapped around goop. And this time, instead of fake fruit goop, some kind of, you know, fake tomato goop. And that's what she was going to give them after school because she was a good mom and she loved them and she cared. So, you know, they would have their white flour, their corn syrup, and their strawberry color flavor goop in the morning, and then the same thing with their tomato goop in the afternoon. If she really loved her kids and was a really good mom, she wouldn't let them anywhere near that kind of crap. And I know that talking about this to this audience seems a little bit silly. And besides the point, it's, you know, I'm certainly preaching to the enlightened choir here. But the comparison between the picture of that breakfast I ate in Japan and what Americans are buying and feeding to their kids was, you know, it was just, I was gobsmacked, to quote an English friend of mine. You know, Michael Pollan calls this kind of stuff food-like edible substances, and that's really what it is. It's not food. It's so far removed from actual food that it's not even considered food anymore. It's a food-like substance. And, you know, what are we doing? We're falling behind educationally. We're falling behind in terms of research and science and medicine and everything. You ever wonder why? I mean, look at what people are eating. Now, of course, I'm saying this as I sit here looking out on the courtyard at Roberta's, where people are eating all this great locally sourced produce and these artisanal pizzas. And you know, there's like sort of two different things going on in the country today. There's a really powerful movement to get real food back into our schools and our kitchens and our lives. But then there's this all-powerful force from the food industry and the corn industry and all those big agribusiness conglomerates to make sure that people keep eating all that garbage. Things like frozen pre-made pancakes, which I don't understand why you would eat pancakes in the first place in the morning, because they'd put me to sleep. But then why do you have to buy them frozen? They're so easy to make. I don't understand it. My mom worked full time and she still made us breakfast. So I'm not sure what's going on. But, you know, Americans, we love our sweet bready breakfast items. And that was okay back when we were farming 12 hours a day, but not so much now when we're all sitting around doing nothing. Okay, anyway, enough of that. We'll take a little break and we'll come right back and we'll talk some more about breakfast on Why We Cook.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to the Big Breakfast Show on Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, and we're talking about breakfast today because a lot of people are getting ready to go back to school or send their kids back, or, you know, your life changes in September. I've been out of school for 25 years, and I still get the September anxiety thinking that I have to suddenly go back to school, even though I don't. I teach, but we teach year-round. Anyway, so we're talking about breakfast, and in the first segment, I was kind of on this rant about what kind of garbage people eat for breakfast in America compared to what I experienced in Japan. And, you know, whether you eat breakfast or not, I'm not here to exhort you to eat it. You know, I'm not one of those nutritionists on the Today Show telling you that it's the most important meal of the day. And although a lot of research has shown that people who eat breakfast perform better throughout the day, and kids certainly perform much better in school if they've eaten something in the morning, although probably not frozen pancakes and Pop-Tarts. Although I suppose the kids who eat the Pop-Tarts will perform slightly better than the kids who don't eat anything. But, you know, it's not that hard to eat something decent in the morning and, you know, get some oatmeal. Not even, you know, don't buy the packets of instant oatmeal because that stuff's practically pre-digested already. It doesn't really do much for you because in order to make it instant, it has to be processed down to a state where it instantly rehydrates. So you're not going to get a lot of benefit from it. You're not going to digest it very slowly, which is really what it's all about with oatmeal. You can make regular rolled oats, the good stuff, in the microwave in 3 minutes. I mean, even I do that. That's how I cook my oatmeal. I do it in the microwave. And I'm a chef, so, you know, it's okay. You can do it. But anyway, I love breakfast, and I love eating breakfast. And I actually fall asleep at night thinking ahead and looking forward to what I'm going to eat for breakfast because I love it so much. And I love having my big cup of English tea with milk in the morning. And I love eating something hot and cooked in the morning. I tend to have kind of wacky blood sugar. It's hard to keep it all that stable. I'm one of those people who needs to eat like every 3 or 4 hours. And if I don't, I start to crash and I get weepy and dizzy and disoriented. And I figured out a long time ago that a way to avoid that was to kind of keep eating a decent amount of protein and good food during the day, not to have a muffin for breakfast because that'll just make you spike and crash. And I think a lot of people go through this cycle every day and don't even realize that it's happening because of what they're eating. And once I figured that out, it sort of all made sense. And now I know how to keep it all really level. But I know that if I have something in the morning with some protein in it and some kind of good carb, whole grain carbs, and a little bit of fat, it keeps me full for a pretty long time. And it also keeps me from crashing. Because like back in college when I would have like coffee and a muffin at 8 o'clock, and by 10:30 I was starving and shaking and ready to have an emotional breakdown. And I finally figured out that it was because of what I was eating, not because of, you know, anything else in my life. Although it was college, so I'm sure there were other issues going on. But once I added in that protein element and got rid of the sugar and the white flour in the morning, I was great. So if you're a regular listener, you know that I was in Vietnam in June. And one of the things I love so much about Vietnam is what they eat for breakfast. And that is soup. They eat soup. Like in Japan, often miso soup is breakfast. In Vietnam, they eat pho, which is a big bowl of brothy beef noodle soup. And it's garnished usually with some chilies and cilantro and a little bit of lime juice. And you can throw in some hoisin sauce or some other herbs or fried shallots. It's kind of like the make-your-own sundae approach to soup eating. And if you really think about it, soup is the most perfect breakfast food. Because, first of all, it rehydrates you after the night when you get dried out. It gives you some protein, maybe a few leafy greens. It fills you up. It's hot. It's soothing. It's the perfect breakfast food. And even in Vietnam, where it's 98 degrees and humid most of the time, people love eating pho for breakfast. They sit down on little tiny tables and chairs by the side of the road and just gulp down big bowls of it. And I think that's just great. I love the idea of soup for breakfast. So when I was in Vietnam, I would generally alternate between having a big bowl of pho one morning, and then other mornings I would have to have a banh mi. And you probably know what banh mi is, but if you don't, it's a Vietnamese sandwich of barbecued pork and pork pate and chili mayonnaise and pickled carrots and usually some sliced up chilies on a baguette. And that's a great breakfast too. I mean, that's like the perfect sandwich. Banh mi, in my opinion, is the world's most perfect sandwich. So I would trade off. And then right at the end of my trip, I discovered something called banh mi opla, which is this other great Vietnamese creation of two eggs. They get fried really quickly on a little metal plate. They put this little plate right on the fire, add some oil, put two eggs in, fry them up really fast, throw in a big blob of spicy tomato sauce, a couple of slices of this sort of spammy stuff, and some onions and tomatoes. And then that gets served with a baguette. And of course, you have your big Vietnamese iced coffee, which is like a big old cup of liquid crack. And that was great too. I mean, and all of those are perfect examples of, you know, not sweet breakfasts, not anything based on sugar and flour, but, you know, really decent quality food. And this is Vietnam, where people work really, really hard, 12 hours a day, and don't have a lot of money. And they're eating really high quality, decent food for breakfast. Here in America, where we're all really wealthy and have more leisure time than we think, we're eating frozen pancakes for breakfast. So what's wrong with this picture? While I was in Vietnam, also a former student of mine came to visit named Diana Kwan, and she writes a great food blog called Appetite for China. And on it, she has some pictures of the opla that we were eating and a whole post about it. So if you want to learn more about that, you can check out her blog, which is called Appetite for China. And, you know, soup is strange conceptually for Westerners to eat for breakfast, which is really too bad. I mean, in China, they eat congee for breakfast, which you make out of your leftover rice. And you boil up the night before's rice with a lot of water. So you stretch it out, fills you up, it hydrates you. And then they throw in little bits of protein, scallions, soy sauce, some nori, anything really that's left over can go into congee. And that sounds great to me too. And a few years ago, I read the autobiography of Jacques Pepin, who's this, you know, old French chef. And Jacques Pepin was working in New York years ago. He was actually working for Howard Johnson years ago doing recipe and menu development, which I think is fascinating that Howard Johnson, the actual guy, hired Jacques Pepin to create items for his menu. But Jacques Pepin opened a soup restaurant many, many years before the kind of soup trend that we had a few years ago. And he wanted to expand his hours and make more money. So he created a whole line of breakfast soups. And they opened in the morning serving these breakfast soups. And he said it was a total failure, a total, utter failure, because nobody wanted soup for breakfast. Nobody would come in and eat soup until noon, when soup was acceptable. So I think it's time to try that again. If anybody out there is interested in opening a breakfast soup type establishment and wants a partner, let me know, because I want to do that. Okay, we have to take another little break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about breakfast. This is Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network.
listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe, www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And if you like what you're hearing on Why We Cook, there are a couple things you can do. The first thing is you can call in anytime when I'm on live, 718-497-2128. Why don't you call in and tell me what you eat for breakfast and why you eat it? You need to justify your choices tonight. But yeah, let us know what you're eating for breakfast, or if you don't eat breakfast and how you feel during the day. It's okay with me. Let me know. The other thing you can do is become a friend and fan of Why We Cook on Facebook. And now you can go to whywecook.com or chefsmartypants.com. Both are my websites. They're connected. So if you go to either one, you'll wind up in the same place. And you can check out what's on there. And write to me. Let me know what you think. Okay. So anyway, we don't have that much more time left tonight. But now what I want to talk about is my niece. My niece is named Sophia. And she is 9. And she started 4th grade today. So way to go, Soph. Good job. 4th grade. That's a big deal. But when Soph was little and first kind of started eating solid foods and kind of feeling her way around the world, well, first of all, she lived in Rome for the first year of her solid food life. So I think that had a lot to do with it. But when she really started being interested in food and making choices about what she wanted to eat, she started making some very interesting breakfast choices. And my sister used to email me every day and told me what Soph ate for breakfast because I found it so fascinating. And being the very sentimental person that I am, I kept every email because I can't get rid of anything like that. And I knew that that material would someday come in handy, and tonight's the night. So here it is. I have a list of highlights of things that Soph ate for breakfast probably between the ages of about 4 and 7. That's when the email span. So, number one, leftover chana shag and rice made into an omelet. Chana shag, if you don't know, is an Indian dish of chickpeas and spinach. They do a lot of eating out and a lot of takeout. They also cook a lot at home. But there's often some kind of interesting ethnic leftover in their kitchen. So, leftover chana shag and rice in an omelet. Clam chowder. Why not clam chowder for breakfast? We just talked about soup for breakfast. She is my niece. Italian wedding soup with raspberries and bread and butter. Sounds good to me. Roast beef rolled up with chèvre inside. Chèvre's goat cheese. With garlic crackers and pineapple. Sounds great. Chicken cordon bleu with plain yogurt, fresh strawberries, dried mango, and flax granola. Calamari with tzatziki. Tzatziki is a cucumber yogurt sauce from Greece. Leftover pasta with meat sauce, quartered fresh apricots and carrots. Now remember, this was all on her own. This is what she decided she wanted to eat. Whole wheat couscous with olive oil and multigrain crackers with mild cheddar. A Chinese curry beef bun and salami and eggs, which I love that combination. It was like a little shout out to her Jewish heritage, the salami and eggs. And goat cheese and roast beef on a roasted garlic ciabatta. So those are just a few of the ones that I saved. So this was what she ate over a period of time. Like I said, between probably about between 4 and 7 years of age. She still does it, but my sister stopped sending me the emails. And so I love that. I love that assortment. I love that she was completely unswayed by convention. And my sister basically let her make her own choices. And luckily, she's a great eater and made great food choices. Her breakfast choices are about food and about the food that she likes, not about Pop-Tarts or preconceived ideas of, you know, what it should be. And there's always a lot of variety around in the house. And she's been exposed to that kind of stuff since she was a baby, like I said, starting in Rome. And once in a while, a few years ago, but she would say things like, "Today I have a very busy day coming up. We have gym at school and I'm going to need a lot of energy. So I need extra broccoli and black beans for breakfast." Now, not to brag about my niece, but I mean, that's a pretty sophisticated kid. Anyway, so she started fourth grade today. I hope she had a good breakfast and is doing well. And then here's a few things I like to eat for breakfast. Kind of along the same lines. I don't like anything sweet in the morning. And I think I've talked about this one before, but I really like to eat oatmeal mixed with miso and scallions and nori shreds. If you've never had it, you have to try it. It's great. Use the like white, gentle miso, the mild miso. Mix it into your oatmeal. It's great. I love a baked sweet potato with cottage cheese melted on it and a lot of black pepper. I like quinoa for breakfast mixed with walnuts and olive oil. That's great. Whole wheat couscous with chickpeas and yogurt. That's a really good one too. If I'm eating eggs, I'll put maybe some smoked Spanish pimenton in there and throw in some chopped up spinach. I really like mushrooms in the morning, and I'll take a bunch of leftover sautéed wild mushrooms and put a runny poached egg on top. That's really great. You make like a hash out of the mushrooms. Trader Joe's makes really good whole wheat English muffins, and I love those with hard-boiled eggs and arugula and mustard. So you see, it's not just about like eggs or pancakes or waffles for me. It's sort of like Soph, all about interesting, you know, out there choices for breakfast. And so I mentioned a minute ago that Soph had lived in Rome when she was a baby. And my sister and her husband were living in Rome with her, and they had an extra bedroom, and I had the opportunity to freeload. So I did. And I went to stay with them in Rome for a couple months. And my sister and I have that same kind of blood sugar issue. We're both a little erratic that way. We need to eat steadily. And we had the hardest time living in Rome because Italians don't eat breakfast. I don't understand how they survive, but breakfast in Italy is an espresso and a cigarette. And that doesn't work for me. I can hear Lorenzo laughing in the control room since he's born in Italy. I'm going to ask him about it after the show. So espresso and cigarettes just doesn't work for me for breakfast. I can't do it. And so my sister and I always had to make sure we were either home in the morning or somewhere where we could get some kind of food, because we would be shaking and crying and passing out from plummeting blood sugar. And all the Italians were riding around on their Vespas, all energetic and cheerful in their high heels and talking on their cell phones. So I don't know what's going on there. I think it's because everybody goes home by noon and eats a gigantic lunch that they just kind of get through the morning that way. But anyway, we're running out of time. So that is the big breakfast show on Why We Cook. Any questions, comments, you're always welcome to become a fan on Facebook or visit whywecook.com or chefsmartypants.com. We are live at 6:30 every Tuesday night here on Heritage Radio Network, or you can listen archived anytime, or you can podcast us now too, which is great. We'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.